Hi, can you see and hear me?
We sure can. Hi, Megan.
Oh, great. Hi.
Hi, Megan.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You betcha.
Well, I think we're ready to roll. So I guess my role to call this meeting to order Monday, October 11th, 2021 of the Lane County Animal Service Advisory Committee and advise Elise that we have a quorum, do we not?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And I guess the first thing we should do is introduce ourselves. Everyone who's present, my name's Scott Bartlett.
I'm Katie James.
Bernadette DiPiero.
And I'm Dave Calderwood.
Okay. And I'm Megan Fresbar with, I'm going to talk about humane education at Green Hill.
Megan, okay. And she and her, right? I saw that on your note. And the staff is who?
Elise Larkin.
Is Elise here?
Yes.
Okay,
Elise is here.
All right. So here we are. We have a quorum. Staff is fully there. And we have Megan to give us a brief about Green Hill's educational outreach. That's going to be great. So the first item is welcome. We've been doing that. Is there anyone who'd like to make a public comment at all?
Hi, Scott. This is Misha English with WAG, and I just want to let you know I'm
here.
Oh,
hey.
Hi.
Misha. Oh, okay. And do you want to speak, Misha?
I was just going to, I was invited by Elise to come and answer any questions about our progress with the feral program. And I had wanted to touch base with, based on the numbers, touch base about the invitation for getting the additional $10,000. So I'm just here to report on that today, whenever you're ready.
How much have we already given you?
We've gotten 10,000, and when you're ready, I can explain. We've already used a fifth of that in about 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and we were closed for a period of time for vacation and whatnot.
Okay.
But if you want to put me on the agenda, that'd be great.
You are on already. Awesome. So thanks. Are there any changes to the agenda or additions anyone would like to put in there?
No, not for me.
Okay, Dave, do you want to put one in?
No.
Okay.
I just wanted to say Sasha Elliott's on here too. I think she's having issues with her computer, so she is on this meeting from Green Hill, just so you know.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. No changes to the agenda. We are now the, is everyone aware of the audio recording or minutes from the June meeting? It's self-explanatory if anyone wants to clarify it or whatever. New and continuing business. David, do you want to talk about importation information updates of any kind that you have in mind?
No, I have nothing on it at all.
Okay. Elise or the staff, what's the status of advisory committee at large vacancy, the update?
The position is still open. We've received no applications.
Wow. Have the application availability been visibly put out there?
Yes, it is available on the county website. And I know that some members have privately distributed it to their friends that were interested in the program.
Okay, is it possible you could have the either your office or the county communication staff to put out a PSA for the Eugene Weekly and the Register Guard, maybe the Sayula News, whatever. They could put it out in the press, and it would be easy for them to do it with a stroke of a couple of pens. I think that'd be a good idea to kind of move it forward.
Yes.
We have no applications in as of yet. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yes.
What position is it? Is it at large or one of the commissions?
Says at large.
It's at large? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This is Katie. It might also be helpful for people to know that we are meeting virtually. I know that a lot of people are concerned about, you know, meeting in person at this time. So you may need to make clear that we are keeping it safe.
Well, sure. I see our public meetings in the Guard. I don't know if they include the Zoom or whatever information. Do they, Elise?
Yes, I do.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Right on. Then it's done. I saw it this month. It's well done. So I guess we'll hopefully the staff will contact the county commercial communications. What's her name? Ash.
Devin Ashbridge.
Right. Yeah. Her or whoever, and put something out there about this vacancy. All right. We're ready for success of WAG's spay and neuter program. And Misha, you're on.
All right. Hi, everybody. So I'm reaching out because, and I don't know if everybody, if Elise was able to share my email and the Feral Fund expended spreadsheet, but we got, I had originally asked for $20,000 to reduce feral cat overpopulation in Lane County, particularly because the Lane County Spay Neuter Voucher Program doesn't permit citizens to use the funds for feral cats. And the committee voted that it would be willing to recommend an initial $10,000 with an invitation to request subsequent funds if we were successful. So the initial $10,000 was dispersed to WAGs a little over 5 months after the committee voted on it. So that's the timeline to kind of consider, and that's what we discussed. It was made clear that there were several different processes it was going to need to go through before we actually were able to disperse. So we immediately put it into place once we got it, and we have been able to use over almost $1,900 so far of it. So in thinking about 5 months down the road at this rate, we would probably use it up by mid-February, and which would be about the time that 5 months would be from now. Actually, it would have been from last meeting, so it would be a little bit later. So not being money grubbing, just wanting to make the committee aware that this is going very well, and the community is being very responsive to it. And we are actually opening up more feral slots to handle the desire for people to bring this in. It definitely spread like wildfire. We promoted it pretty heavily. And so just wondering if the committee wants to revisit that topic, since we know by the time we got the funds, we will in all likelihood be out of it. This is, of course, contingent on what kind of weather we have. But if the last 2 years is any indication, we really didn't have a winter. And when we don't have a winter, we actually don't have a kitten season per se. It just sort of continues on. So we anticipate, you know, based on an assumption that we're going to have a milder winter this year, that we will be, you know, the citizens will need this fund through the winter, and that we will use it up by February.
Could you please explain how you used the $1,900 precisely?
Sure. Yeah, I did send a spreadsheet over. I'm not sure if y'all received it. In the spreadsheet is the service date, the animal name, the patient number, $25 from the Smith funds, the client copay is $20. And then, of course, WAG subsidizes this by about 50%, because for $45 total, they receive spay-neuter services, in addition to several vaccines, flea and ear mite treatment, and, you know, sometimes we deal with teeth and nails and whatever else the animal needs to be as healthy as they possibly can to go back out into the world, and that includes a rabies shot. And then the unincorporated Lane County address is listed there, and then whether or not it's been vetted. So we basically use the Lane County website, like we do for the vouchers, to plug in the address, and that tells us whether it's incorporated or unincorporated Lane County. If they're incorporated, then we move them to a different fund, which has been supported by Lovable and the International ASPCA. And so they've actually come up with the $25 for those, and then it's the client copay. And we're raising funds actively right now to build that fund up so that we can serve everyone equally and not have to worry about the address for them getting the funding. Albeit we do track and we provide a report for International ASPCA for incorporated Lane County, just as we do for Lane County Animal Services Advisory Committee.
Now, these services, are they for feral cats or all cats
yep.
that need it?
No, feral cats only, with the only exception being if there is a litter of kittens that there is a belief that they could be placed, because some people don't want to adopt an animal that has an ear tip, and because we require an ear tip with the feral cat package, they are also allowed to use for those kittens or cats that are socialized or could be socialized and rehomed. We allow them to use the Smith Fund, still only the $25, but for a cat package that we again heavily subsidize, where they get all of the same services, but it's a much higher price, but that way they don't have to have the ear tip, and but they can still take feral kittens and use this particular fund.
There's nothing okay. with them missing part of their ear.
Yeah, we wish everybody agreed with that, but unfortunately they don't.
Scott, I would like to address this in this meeting, but I would like to hear from Greenhill first, from Sasha, what they have plans or what their needs are as well. And so I'd like to address it a little later in the meeting, but I would like to address this in this meeting.
Yeah.
And
we also do not have an agenda item that would necessarily enable us to make any recommendations or decisions, but we're getting closer to it, and this is very valuable.
There's no reason why we can't make a recommendation in this meeting, is there? No. Well, I want more information before I do it, but I would be willing to make
it. There is no agenda item pertaining to funding or use of that program. The funding, we're getting oriented here, and we can certainly do that at our next meeting.
Why can't we do it at this meeting?
Well, Misha says it's not actually necessary. We're talking about next year in February, so we're going to have a couple of meetings between then and now.
She said it's about 5 months before it would actually happen. It's October, November, December, January, February. It'll be March before they get the money. If we make a donation this meeting. And she just said that they will probably have it used up by February.
Well, it's been 5 months so far, right?
Well, we made the recommendation, I don't know how long ago, but she said it was 5 months after we made the recommendation that they actually received the money.
There's quite a long waiting period.
Sure. Anyway, I'd like to move along, and after I hear Greenhill's report, then I would like to discuss making a recommendation to donate another five. Because I've already discussed it with Dr. Penfold at length, and he's in agreement as well to go ahead and donate another five. But I'm not doing it quite yet. Till I hear from Greenhill.
We have to be very aware of the Oregon open meetings law with respect to any partial decision as to appropriation.
I see what discussion. Okay.
There is no agenda item on this. We'll talk about that at the appropriate time.
Okay, that's fine. Can we make sure that's on the agenda for next meeting then?
Absolutely. Could be the first item if you want.
Okay, well, and, I don't care where.
Okay.
Anything I understand else, your concern.
Okay. Is there anything else, Misha, that you want to discuss? Well, one thing I had is you said the spay and neuter county voucher funds are not available for feral unincorporated, or did I get that totally wrong?
No, that's true. It's very explicit on the application that folks fill out to receive monies from the county for a cat spay or neuter on the voucher that it is not, feral cats are not eligible. They have to be owned cats.
I don't recall ever making that stipulation. Do you? Anyone here? I mean, if they're cats that live in unincorporated Lane County and they're in need of being spayed and neutered, or they will proliferate and presumably with a greater risk for transmissible serious diseases, leukemia, feline leukemia, et cetera, why on earth would we want to exclude that, especially when we don't really spend much of this money year in and year out?
This is WAG. This isn't us. This is WAG, Scott. This isn't us. It's not our decision.
No,
sorry. It is the county. It's a county rule.
Oh, okay.
This isn't our rule. Yeah, and it's been in effect for as long as I have been with WAG.
We did not, unless I'm amnesiac, which is certainly possible in my advanced age here, but I don't recall making a foolish rule like that. And if it's not really set in stone, and if we continually, after having with good vision created the spay neuter fund with a set amount that goes to it, and it's never fully spent and is always rolled over, why can we not incorporate, add it as an available source for assisting these poor cats? They don't have any money.
I would agree with you, Scott.
I would too.
So do I.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if, this was we set this up in what, 2003?
I don't know when it was.
Yeah, no, it was from the get-go based on New Hampshire, New Jersey, et cetera. Purpose is to get animals that ought not to be proliferating to not proliferate. So let's address that a little bit here. All right, is there anything else, Misha, with regard to WAGs? You're saying now that you could benefit from having these funds accessible for paralyzing unincorporated Lane County feral cats?
Yeah, I just wanted to give the committee a heads up of the timeline from the time of decision making on the advisory committee's end and Lane County Animal Services also approving it to getting through the county commissioner to getting the funds released was a little over 5 months. So just giving you a sense of the rate that we're using it, our anticipated future rate, and the rate that we believe that if the monies were released, how long we assume the process would take for disbursement.
When did you actually get this money, the first $10,000?
We received it on 7/19, and then it took us about a week to kind of, we had to start not filling our schedule, any cancellations. We started to reserve for feral, so that took us a little while to clear our decks. And then we actually promoted it on 7/28. So the start date was 7/28.
So really, we're looking at 10 weeks here. that this been, and in 10 weeks you've already used, I think you're saying a fifth of the money?
A little bit over the fifth, and it's been only 8 weeks because we were closed for a two-week vacation.
Well, I see almost 3 months and 8 days that since you've gotten it, but
I don't have the spreadsheet that I gave. I don't have the updated version of it. I believe we've done another 10 or 11 cats, but I would have to confirm that. So my date for the expended funds spreadsheet that I believe you're all in receipt of now, I saw that Elise sent it out again, was 9/12 is the date that was done. So a month ago.
Elise, is there any reason why 5 months or 150 plus days has to transpire for them to get a disbursement?
It is an extensive process to get something brought before the Board of Commissioners for approval. It has to be put on the county calendar and get approval, and it also has to be put in a board packet and get signatures from all of the powers that be prior to it even getting scheduled on the county calendar to go before the commissioners for approval. The WEGs and the last request from Greenhill were my first times doing that process, and it was definitely a time-consuming process. 5 months may be a little long, but I think sure 3 to 4 is definitely a reasonable realistic time frame that it could take. It's not a fast process.
Could we have asked the board to allocate to R and the staff's time discretion a full $20,000 and then decide based on need when to disperse the second part? Seems like to go incrementally, that's awfully bureaucratic. That's kind of ridiculous. Is there some way we could get a little more discretionary authorization if the board was agreeable?
I mean, if the advisory board had agreed to release $20,000 initially, that would have been approved. But the advisory board decided to go with $10,000 and see how the program was going.
Right. I remember
right
that.
Right now we have less than, 20% of it expended. But I understand what Misha's saying. Is there anything else further to discuss about the WAGS program? One question that, we touched on it. Speaking of the so-called unavailability of spay and neuter voucher funds for unincorporated Lane County feral cats, is that something that's set in stone, or can the staff and the committee basically expand availability to include unincorporated feral cats?
I think there's some things that need to be considered in changing some of the parameters on the spay-neuter voucher. Not all vet clinics are as equipped to handle feral cats, so those are usually cats coming in humane traps. As WAGs are, not all vets are comfortable dealing with feral cats. For spay neuters, that I guess we would need to put some feelers out to the vet clinics that accept our vouchers and see if they want to handle feral cats, if their staff is able to deal with feral cats. There's definitely a handful of people we do business with that do not accept feral cats. For treatment. Also part of the spay-neuter voucher program from an animal control standpoint that we really push is we push it for dogs to use it so they can get a free county license. Because if they get spay-neutered and they use the voucher, then they get that dog license, which is important.
Good. Good. Good news.
Well, Well, let's address this more specifically and communicate in the interim, because we're pretty new in the fiscal year. Elise, how much of the spay and neuter funds were not utilized the last fiscal year offhand?
Oh, I would hesitate to make an on-record estimate on that, but there was definitely unused funds. I can get you a more precise number at the next meeting.
Was it significant, though? It usually is.
Yes, it is.
And do those funds actually roll over? My recollection, this is Misha again, my recollection is that the unused funds go into the general fund, so they actually don't continue to go to spay-neuter.
Right. That's correct.
No, it's not correct.
My understanding is that they roll over.
Oh.
They do roll over, but they go to the animal services kind of discretionary fund, do they not, Elise? That's what Betty had, I think, told us, that those monies aren't just relinquished. They're retained, but maybe in a less targeted fashion. Is that the case, do you know, staff?
I'm not involved in the counting aspects of the program, but my understanding was that it rolls over and that the fund doesn't diminish or get replaced.
Yes.
The new fiscal year, it just continues on.
Very good, very good. Well, I mean, our experience and our frustration has been that we really wanted every year for this to be fully used to the greatest benefit for, you know, our companion dogs and cats, and for their needs for sterilization and et cetera. So let's look at that. Anything else on the WAG program?
Nothing here.
Misha, how many, I don't have your printout in front of me, and or I might, but I'm not too adept at this computer stuff. In a nutshell, generally speaking, how many animals did WAG spay neuter last year?
Last year was 2020, so we were mandatorily closed for 2 years. So we did have we would have had a 20% reduction, but we hustled and people were in real need. So typically we do 5,000 or over. Last year, we ended up doing 4,300, so we didn't quite have a 20% deficit based on the closure.
Are they all cats or cats and dogs?
80% cats, 20% dogs.
This is very good. I think, that's a good number. You really make a dent, so I'm sure we will authorize this. All right, Green Hills Community Outreach Programs. Thank you, Misha. Megan, would you care to enlighten us?
I'll do my best. thanks for having me. And I just wanted to talk a little about the evolution of this humane education program and where we're at right now. I'm very fortunate to have my own personal, can everyone hear me and see me okay?
Yes.
Great. Okay. Sorry. I never know what's going to happen here on my computer. So, I've been really fortunate to have my own personal dog that happens to be become a therapy animal, basically. She's very gentle and she's older. And so, I started out, I've been here for 3 years. Again, my name's Megan, and I'm the community engagement and humane education manager here at Green Hill. And, I'm excited to finally get back into schools again and speak to young people about humane education. I've broken it. It's kind of broken up to preschool to like first to second grade is a really wonderful time to go in and speak about, introducing, learning to introduce yourself to an animal you don't know, and teaching kids how to, what an animal needs to live and to thrive and to be kind. And then one of my biggest talking points to people of all ages is that, you know, I really like to ask young people, if you, you know, need help and you're in danger, what do you do? And a lot, you know, ask for help, talk to an adult, things like that. And then I like to say, well, what does an animal do? Because do they have a voice? And so a lot of my theme is, we are the voice for animals. And it's really important that humans speak up for animals. And that's what we do here at Green Hill. I do talk a lot about, if you see an animal in trouble, that there are animal police out there that will help animals. It's okay to tell an adult and make sure that they call the right people. They can always call Green Hill. They can call the police, and just educate young people on that. But preschool, first, second grade is a lot of just, you know, learning to meet an animal that you've never met. And so what, like the way that this, that I got here with you guys is that I was speaking with David and we were talking about different techniques, and I used to be an elementary school teacher very briefly. And so I'm very lucky I have that background to be able to go into schools and to engage with young people. And one of the great things that works really well is I come in and everyone is just so excited to see a dog, right? So they see Tula and everyone wants to pet Tula. And so I let everyone, you know, get their pets in, and then we have to sit still and sit down. And this goes all the way up to like fourth grade, really. So I talk a little about Green Hill, what we do, what we are, and the voice and how you can help. But then what I do is I say, you know, Tula is really tired today. She's had a big day, and being in front of all of you is really exhausting for her. So I actually need someone to volunteer to be a dog for me. So that's when you're really going to start engaging young people, is actually getting them involved. So they're not just sitting there listening. They're engaged. They're laughing. They're giggling, because that one person, I try my best to bring up the more shy student. Bring them up and say, and so I like, and then I have someone hold Tula for me, which is always very exciting. So you're picking and choosing these young people to be engaged, and not just sitting and listening. And that's really the most important part of education in general, is getting them involved. And that's sometimes physically, you know, so I'll have a young person come up and then I whisper in their ear, is it okay if I mess your hair up? And they look at me and they are usually almost always say yes. And so I say, okay. So then I do a little like role play. I said, okay, this dog, you know, I asked them their name, and let's say the name is Bobby. I said, this is Bobby. What a cute dog. Look at this cute dog, Bobby. Oh my gosh. I think Bobby's wiggling his tail. So Bobby will wiggle his tail and everyone will giggle. And so I'm like, you know, I'm at my friend's house and I've never met Bobby before. And boy, do I want to pet Bobby. What a cute dog. He looks really, really cute. Well, I'm going to go ahead. I'm just going to run up and just go say hi. And so I run up and I usually mess their hair up, or sometimes like jostle them a little, but they know I'm doing it. I get permission. And everyone just thinks that's the silliest, funniest thing. And the kids die laughing. And I basically just say, now, is that weird? And they're all like, yeah, that's so weird. And I was like, okay, well, what do you think a dog feels like when you do that? And they just are like, oh no. And I was like, that's uncomfortable, huh? Yeah, that's uncomfortable. And I'll say, well, what does a dog that's annoyed say? You know, and they'll say the growl or the bark. And I'll say, exactly. And then we talk about growling being a warning. It's not because they're mean dogs. They're scared. I just scared this dog. And so then I, you know, start over. And then I will be like, okay, let's try this again the right way, and basically do the whole, you know, wow, look at this cute dog, Bobby. I really want to pet this dog, Bobby, but I've never met Bobby. So I'm going to actually ask Bobby's owners if I can pet their dog first. So I'll ask a kid in the audience, hey, can I pet your dog right now? And they'll say usually yes. And so then I approach Bobby very slowly and kindly. And I explain that, you know, when we shake hands as humans, that's us saying hi. Well, with us, with dogs, is either putting our fist out, turning our side to them, and talking about body language. And then I do it again with cats. And I let usually another student come up, and then we do the whole thing with cats. And then, of course, I ask, you know, what does a cat when they're angry do? And, you know, we all have to be careful of cats. And, you know, dogs love people, but we work for our cats. So we have to be really, really careful about that. And so the whole idea is just to teach the young people in regards to we're including now body language and being their voice and understanding that we need to respect them as sentient beings. I do talk a lot about that as well as, you know, do you have an iPad at home or a computer at home? And, you know, all the kids will raise their hand and I'll be like, well, like, do you pet your computer? Does your computer greet you at the door? And just try to make sure they understand that these animals are sentient beings and not just another computer or anything like that. And another thing I really talk about is very young is, and also actually, to be honest, every age. I just did a presentation at Cartage Grove High School. And I talk about it very openly is like, I just talk about hitting, you know, and I'm like, do we hit each other? No. Okay. So why would we hit animals? And I'm like, you know, in the old days I talk about, and this is true, you know, I said, my dad, when we had a dog and I was a little girl, in the old days, he hit my dog when my dog was bad. He didn't know any better. He's a smart man. He was a doctor, but he still thought that was the way to do it. We don't do it that way anymore. So it's really important. We don't hit each other. We're kind to each other. Do we scream in each other's faces? You know, these are things we need to think about because they don't have a voice to tell us to stop. What are some of the ways that they tell us to stop? And that's when I, you know, body language again, we talk about the tail tucked, their ears back, they're growling, they're hiding, they're shivering and things like that. And I did have an experience when I first started doing this with a third grader who raised his hand and he said, my dad hits my dog all the time. And so that was a big lesson for me, big picture, just compassion level of realizing, okay, this is a touchy subject in a bigger picture, like family dynamic, and you got to be really careful with that. And so in regards to that, I basically said, well, you have two options. One option is to talk to your dad about what you learned today. And if you feel comfortable talking to him and explaining to him, you know, what we talked about, that'd be great. Maybe he could learn something. And then I said, but if you don't feel comfortable talking to him about this, just know that you're not going to hit dogs anymore. And that's okay. Because I want this child to feel safe in their own home, because that dynamic, you know, what I've learned in humane education, one of the main lessons is young people that harm animals become adults that harm other humans. And the likelihood is pretty big, that bullying factor. So that's kind of the young people factor. Middle age, I like to address population, overpopulation issues. We were really fortunate. Unfortunately, we bought it right before COVID hit, but we have an incredible curriculum that I'm very excited to use. It's for third, fourth, and fifth graders. It's called No More Bullying. And it's actually a program, and if I haven't been able to get in schools, because it's a 5-day program where you go in every day for an hour and they get workbooks. And so basically it's all about, it's comparing bully breeds, judgment, judging a book by its cover, and then, you know, why we don't harm or bully animals and why we don't harm each other. So it really becomes a really cool, like, lesson on society of animals and humans being kind and kindness to animals. It speaks a lot about responsibility, what is the word humane, and just, you know, educating on our responsibility to what we should provide for animals, and what are our responsibilities to animals. And compassion is a big word, empathy for other animals that don't have a voice. And then when we get into the high school or the older kind of area, I talk about careers in animal welfare and careers in just animal care. There's so many people that, young people that assume that if they want to work with animals, they have to do it medicine, you know, veterinarian, CBT. So we start talking about that. And I mean, this is after I do PowerPoint presentation and talk about what we do at Green Hill, just to give people and young people an idea. And then from there, I discuss a list of different career opportunities that we have here at Green Hill and other places. And I used to own a dog walking service for 16 years. So I got to work with animals by being my own business owner, and trying to inspire young people to know that they don't have to have, 8 years of education to become a veterinarian to work with animals. That, you know, I talk about our own front office here at Green Hill. They're, you know, they're advocating for animals via phone and computer every single day. I talk about our animal technicians and the different types of care that our animal, you know, and volunteer opportunities, our incredible volunteers that are coming and exercising and loving on animals. So that's kind of a very vague description of what I've been doing. My future goal right now is to recruit some volunteers that have either history in education or just have that dynamic and want to be out into the public, and train them on our different presentations and different, you know, what we're doing, and get them out so we can get more people to hear what we have to say. School just started, so I've gotten the word out, and people are all kind of getting caught up, and things are virtual. Things are a little complicated, but I've already, since school has started, I've probably been to 4 or 5 schools. I'm going on Wednesday to a high school. So the word is getting out. So now it's just kind of the marketing of this idea and getting it out there. And then I'm also working in a human animal veterinary social work program I'm studying, and a lot of it has the humane education. So I'm getting a lot of ideas from that program as well. So there's a lot of potential out there. And I feel like it's needed in our community right now to really understand, because people love animals in Lane County. And I think it's really important to talk about the services provided for people. Oh, another really important thing that I like to talk about is it's okay to surrender an animal. And talking, you know, we talk about Green Hill Services adoption. Everyone gets so, yay, of course. And people raise their hand. I adopted my animal there. I'm like, well, what if you have a hard time, or what if you lost your house? You know, what do you do? And then I talk about the option of surrendering and how hard that is, and how you are making that selfless choice for an animal, and how nice it is to make sure, even though you're going to miss that animal, but that animal's having a really hard time. And I'll give some examples of people that have moved into their cars and what a rough time it is. And do you think it's okay to have 4 cats living in a car for 2 months, you know, and what do you think about that? And depending on ages, I try to make it age appropriate where it's not depressing, but it's something to think about, and also give these young people, especially like of all ages, permission to give to their families if these are decisions that are being made, because people are having a really hard time right now.
I have 3 questions.
Yes.
One, you're obviously getting into the schools. Are you invited into the school, or are you proactive about getting into the schools? How do you do that?
Correct. So far, it has been a little of both. I've used networking with our volunteers that work in schools to kind of get the word out. I have advertised via Facebook for Jay and Bethel, like, hey, I'm here if you guys need me. Word of mouth presentations, I hand my card out, tell your friends, tell your teachers. I just want people to know that if teachers need it. And then on the other hand, I've worked with enough teachers now that spread the word in their schools. As the year kind of goes on, I get more invites, the word gets out. And they also they're in need of more curriculum as they keep going, something to spice it up, change it up. I've been doing a lot of virtual tours too to classrooms because kids are on Zoom and things like that. But yeah, it's a little of both. And I definitely know I could improve my marketing and my networking to get out there. But I've really been trying to solidify my points and what I'm trying to get across and what's the most important with each age group, which can be a little tricky.
Okay. You mentioned safety. You teach safety and you teach responsibility. Yes. One thing Scott and I wanted to do at one time, we never got it done, was to, in along with responsibility, was to license. That was one of our focuses on this committee, was to increase licensing. Could you possibly incorporate that in your talks as far as to help us increase licensing? Because it is a free ride home for an animal if an animal is lost.
Yeah.
Possibly incorporate that.
Absolutely, because we require it when people pick up their return to owners. So absolutely, yeah. I'd be happy to throw that in there. And it's an important thing for people to know and know the benefits of why we license. Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
You could also possibly ask them to raise their hands to see if they know if their dogs are licensed. Yeah. And if they're not, you could give them an application for a license or a piece of paper that shows how.
Yes. Yeah. Those are all really, you know, I rarely have done handouts just because of COVID and everything like that, but that's not a bad idea. I like it. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm really pleased to hear that you're in the schools. Like I said, Scott and I tried to do it. We never got it done. Because we know in 10 years, those are going to be our adults.
Exactly.
And that should help with intake, because a lot of the reason the dogs end up at the Humane Society in the first place or animal control is over temperament or training, lack of training.
Right.
And so that should help quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, my goal is to avoid dangerous situations so sure. we can read, you know, kids can learn young to like understand if a dog is growling, it's not a bad, mean dog. It's telling you to step away and you need to listen to what they're saying, you know, and hopefully prevent some and to spread the word. It's great because my mom was walking my own dog through a park and three kids ran up and said, "Is that Tula?" So at least it's working. They remember her at least. But
I see children do dangerous things with dogs all the time when they approach them. So yeah. I'm glad to hear that you're doing that.
Thank you. Does anyone else have any questions?
Do you talk about keeping their dog on a leash or keeping their dog confined or anything like that?
You know, when I talk about responsibility, I talk a lot about, I think it's more interacting with dogs in the public that are on leash. I guess but that's a really good question. And that is a good point to talk about. You know, we follow the rules with our animals, right? We follow the rules walking down the street. Do we let them run in the street? And when I open, I talk about Tula's story, which was she was running through the streets of San Francisco, dirty, gross, and eating garbage off the ground. And like, how scary is that for her running into traffic, you know? But no, I love the point of talking about just the importance of leashing your dog in the places they're supposed to leash. Is that fun to have an animal jump on you when you're walking through the park? No, that's not fun. So let's be nice. And there's great dog parks in town, you know, so good point.
You know, we've talked in the past to feed off, is it the McGruff, you know, that McGruff dog that would.
The crime dog?
Yeah.
What do they call it? McGruff? Is that the the name of that dog?
McGruff crime dog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kids love that. I mean, do they still have, is that a program where you could almost combine or dovetail sometimes like some visits?
I don't know if it's still around. I mean, I could look into it, you know, it's pretty cool. But, you know, I know it's a lot about crime as well as like the guard dog kind of thing, which is a little different than the humane education factor. But you can always incorporate anything when you're creative. And, you know,
we discussed a way in the past. Did you see and have most of you seen the very sophisticated movie? Dumb and Dumber. but the thing that was great about that is that they were in Rhode Island, these two characters, and they were dog groomers, if I'm not mistaken, and they take off in this remodeled van that looks like a giant dog.
Yeah, the dog head car.
Yeah, that was just so cool. And I'll bet you, if we had talked about having two mascots for Lane County Animal Services, the dogs being named Laney and the cats being named Eugenie.
Oh, and, cute.
You know, we never really... further, you know, went on that, but I'll bet you that the Nil family, Shannon, Eric, whatever, they might be willing to donate a really nice vehicle that could be detailed and outfitted like that.
A dog head.
Yeah.
A green
head. Yeah. Don't you think kids would, don't you think they'd light up if they saw something as goofy and interesting as a dog car?
Yeah, I mean, that would be more, I think, aimed at events, because when we go to these humane education discussions, they're usually in schools, so they don't see us, you know, but there are so many children's celebrations and Bark in the Park and all these events, you know, out there that it would definitely be funny. But, you know, I would love to invite you all to, my email was on this last email address, but invite you to send me any ideas. I'm always learning. I'm always kind of wanting to know what is the important factor to get out there and educate these young people to be the voice of animals and be safe around animals and spread the word about it, you know, and also, you know, just remember that animals don't have a voice, and that, you know, that Green Hill exists and that we adopt out animals and we help animals and it's okay to help animals and you can do it without touching an animal. That's something that's really important. Like, you have to be safe first. Your safety is number one. If you see an animal, let's say a dog running down the street, do you think chasing it is going to be your best bet? And ideally they say no, or I say it's not. The best thing to do is for you to call, you know, talk to an adult and have them call either the animal police or Green Hill and report it. You know, but I mean, I know there are other safety factors out there that I'd be happy to kind of add to the curriculum.
You know, when you said that one of these lovely children said that their father routinely beat up the dog, you know, we studied animal abuse and the nexus with crime, and there have been certain legislative policies with regard to children and family services, adult and family services being interconnecting with animal enforcement and police agencies. And there was an exhaustive study that we looked at from Utah State years ago. And in that study, apropos to what you were saying, there is a clear documented nexus, not only between children that watched animal abuse, not just performed it, but even watched it, and then winding up in the most horrible behavior as adults, serial killers, etc. So if you see the rare example of some child saying and crying or whatever that he or she sees animal abuse, and what can you do quietly, not to implicate the child, but to have someone maybe look into that?
Well, thankfully, being in schools, their teachers are involved. And I can tell you that when I did give that presentation, the teacher, before I had an answer, I had to like think about it. The teacher locked eyes with me and her eyes got really big. So, you know, it was definitely a point to think about. And that's why I answered with choice and not telling them what to do because of this child's safety, right? Because that could be a factor that's bigger than that. For him to even announce in his class that his dad hits his dog, you know, and I mean, people still do it, unfortunately, but people still react, you know, you know, but I could look at, basically after I gave both choices, the teacher kind of nodded and looked at me and we chatted about it after. And I said, I hope that was okay. That was kind of my first time dealing with that. And she was like, no, that was good. Thank you. You know, so, I mean, technically teachers are, you know, mandated reporters. So I would hope if that teacher, you know, if I had, of course, any fear, I would directly talk to the teachers if I did understand that or have any misconception that the child was being harmed. But I would hope that the teacher, because they spend the year with them, would also be keen to that.
Something else you can incorporate to possibly help that a time or two is to encourage the children to learn how to train a dog.
Yeah.
In other words, go to obedience classes, get involved with agility, or whatever, so that they can learn how to train, which will carry over to the parents.
Yeah, I actually do talk about positive reinforcement, how we use treats and reward to reward animals. In the old days, we used to punish them for doing something wrong. Now we reward them for doing something right. And then with that, we usually kind of end the entire presentation where Tula, my dog, does a sit, stay, or like a couple tricks. Shake, sit, basics, and she gets rewards. Right. And then I do a sit, stay, and make her sit. And I walk around the entire classroom while she waits. And I release her, so she has to jump and run through the kids, which they just think is hilarious, to come to get to me.
Excellent.
I really talk about, you know, how important it is. And I talk about like all the factors, right? Especially the young people, like, you know, what do you do every day? How do you live every day? You know, when you wake up in the morning, what do you have to do? Well, we have to eat breakfast. Well, right. So does your dog just make themselves breakfast? No, that's our job, you know, and things like that. And how, like, they go to school, you know, do you think our dog would like to go to school, you know, and think and thing like that. And exercise. I really push exercise because a lot of kids are like, my dog barks all the time. I'm like, your dog is probably so pent up. I don't say that, but I do say like, oh, you know what? What if you never had recess? What if you just sat in your classroom all day long and did not get a break or lunch or recess? Would that be fun? No. Well, do you think your dogs would like to not have recess? You know, and really try to put it on their level as of their livelihoods and kind of compare themselves and let them know that these animals need the same kind of care that they're getting from their parents or grandparents or aunts or uncles or their caretakers.
When I first heard you talk about this, it made me excited. because I think it's very much needed, and I'm very, very pleased to hear that Greenhill is proactively doing something and that you're so passionate about it. And it sounds like you're doing a great job.
Well, I really appreciate it. I am very passionate about it. This is my absolute favorite part about my job, and I love my job. So it means a lot to me to walk away. I always walk away super jazzed after talking to these kids and having them ask these really good questions and understand it and be meaningful. So thank you. And I appreciate it. And again, if you ever, any of you, please, I'm inviting you to please send me any ideas or anything that you would think that would help, you know, or questions. But thank you for having me today, and I'm honored to be here.
I appreciate you being
here. You know, this is wonderful. But
yes,
if you have kids standing up when they're watching and, you know, watching you and benefiting from this, at the very end, you could have, if it's a small group, have them dance to your boombox of Who Let the Dogs Out?
You know what? I usually...
Who is the dog?
I usually reward them with lining up and all saying goodbye to Tula so they all get some love, but that would actually be really funny.
You did a good job for us.
Well, thank you.
You're doing a great job for Lane County. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. And
thank you, Megan.
My pleasure. Again, any questions, feel free to move forward, but you guys have a great rest of your meeting, and I appreciate you letting me be here and talking.
Thank you, Megan.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, for agenda 5, Green Hill Activity, was that rolled into Megan's presentation, or is Sasha or anyone else, or is there any report or anything that we would look at, or shall we have that at our next meeting?
I think that's up to you guys. This is Sasha, and I am here ready to report, although if you do feel that the Green Hill presentation on humane education already took up enough time in this meeting, I'm happy to wait until our next gathering.
No, this is Sasha?
Yes, hi.
Oh, well, great. No, I didn't know you were there. Go ahead, you're up.
Okay, let's see. We currently have 164 animals in our care. We have been, we've been fairly busy responding to an increase of people wishing to surrender their animals, and partially due to financial constraints, changes in households, or expectations not aligning with what type of animal they have in their home. So the other thing that I wanted to add is that we participated with Elise and several officers from all over the state of Oregon in the Oregon Animal Control Council Conference. It's a mouthful. September 29th through October 1st. And there's a lot of great presentations, some presentations by the Portland metro area about disaster response, which we're continuing to work on here in Lane County. There's presentations by the state prosecutor of animal abuse and neglect. But what I thought particularly could be interesting to this group was that there was a presentation also by Ashley Kunze, who is in charge of the animal rescue entity coordination for the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And specifically, she noted that there are so this is the animal rescue entity licensing is what this group has talked about over the last few years, and was in major support of moving those responsibilities to the state. It's a situation in which any organization that takes in 10 or more animals a year and solicits or accepts donations in any form must register for this license. Currently, Ashley said that there are 63 known rescues in Lane County, and only 23 of those are currently registered with the state of Oregon.
So, Sasha, this is Katie. I have a question about that. So who would be responsible? What's the responsible party for making sure they get licensed?
Yeah, so each of us as individual organizations that meet that criteria are responsible for registering with the state. There's a license fee, there's an inspection, and an audit in which records are reviewed. And, you know, it's very important to make sure that any animal rescue in this state knows where their animals are coming from, what type of care or treatment is being given to them while in that organization's care, and then where those animals are going. Particularly if they are crossing state lines, they need to have a certificate of veterinary inspection. And so these are just a few of the criteria that that the records are audited for during that inspection.
And is it the state, is it a state level that carries out this inspection, or is this on a county level?
Correct. It's the state. It's the Oregon Department of Agriculture that oversees this, and they are responsible for accepting applications, reviewing those applications, issuing the licensing, and then also conducting both the inspections. Once you become a licensed organization, also there's a way to inquire or report if there is a organization that is suspected to not be following best practices in terms of caring for animals or transporting animals. And I believe that she said at some point there'll be an online search option where you'll be able to type in an organization's name and see if they're actually licensed or not. But I was not able to find that website before this meeting. I apologize.
When you do find that URL, could you provide that to us?
Yeah, Elise might be able to add to this if she remembers. I have a note that there was a website forthcoming, but I don't actually have a URL for it. In the slides that Ashley shared, she just shared it was oregon.gov/ODA. With the bullet point underneath it where you can search ODA license holders, but I have not been able to locate that.
Okay. You said there's 63 rescues, identified rescues in Lane County, only 23 are licensed. I would assume a number of them, I don't know if that's correct or not, that a number of them wouldn't know that they're supposed to be licensed. How are we getting the word out? And if they aren't licensed, is there a way to get them licensed?
Yeah, that is a great question, I think, and something perhaps that this group could spend some energy working on. There were letters sent out when the responsibility transferred from the county level to the state. Mm-hmm. At that point, Greenhill, we received communication from the state alerting us that that this was the new path and right. that licensing would be forthcoming. We then received communication that the application was up and running. We then received communication that we had until, I believe it was maybe July 1st of this past summer to complete that. We had completed it and passed inspection well before that. But I know the state is being proactive in communicating outwards, but I'm not quite sure if there's anything else that our county can do in terms of being supportive of this communication and really encouraging rescues to participate.
Well, it's a state law, or I don't know if I would call it a law, but it would be up to the state to do it. And I would assume getting it in the newspapers or on the TV would be one way to get the word out. And of course, word of mouth with the rescues themselves, which most of them probably know each other. But if they're, what's the penalty for them not being licensed? Right. That would be an issue, a question too. Do you know what the penalty is?
I do not.
I have a couple of questions. When was this put in place? This
July.
Policy change?
Well, so this was a result of Senate Bill 883, which passed back in 2019. And it's an amendment to an ORS that moved the enforcement and licensing of animal rescue entities to the Office of the State Veterinarian at the Oregon Department of Ag instead of where it previously was, which was the responsibility of the counties.
If you remember, Scott, some time ago I brought this up, and it was the county. It was put on the county by the state veterinarian. It was put on the county to enforce this themselves. We didn't have the ability. We didn't have the manpower. We didn't have the money to do it. And eventually, it got around to the state. They realized that it wasn't being enforced. There was only one county in the whole state, and that was, I believe, Multnomah, that was enforcing it. And so
the
state finally took it upon themselves to take responsibility to do it themselves. And this is a result. I think it's a very important thing.
My question is, more specifically, what is the bill number? Senate bill what?
It was 883.
Correct.
And who?
2019.
Who was the 2019 session?
Yes.
And who was the bill's sponsor?
Well, I have no idea. If off the top of my head, I think it was a state veterinarian, but I'm not certain.
Can we have a copy?
From the state veterinarian. He wouldn't be the sponsor, but he's the one that asked that it be done.
Well, it would be introduced at the behest of either state veterinarian.
Right.
Now, the state then... But this is only for registering rescue organizations that bring animals in into the state, or just
right. And what we're concerned with disease.
Can I clarify real quick? Under who needs a license? It's animal rescue entities are defined as any individual or organization, including but not limited to an animal control agency, humane society, animal shelter, animal sanctuary, or boarding kennel not subject to ORS 167-374. It excludes veterinary facilities and foster facilities, but basically they're looking for these entities that keep, house, and maintain in the individual's or organization's legal custody 10 or more animals at any given time, and that solicits or accepts donations in any form. So this could be a foster-based rescue. This could be a well-established humane society like Green Hill, and it could be a wide variety in between.
Could it be Lane County Animal Services?
No, because they are not boarding any animals, I don't believe.
Or importing.
Yeah, they are Lane County Animal Services is not they're not keeping legal custody. They're transferring custody to Green Hill to perform the boarding and the care, even if it's an ongoing court case or a seizure. So I don't believe that Lane County Animal Services, although Elise might jump in, I don't believe LCAS needs to license
an animal rescue organization.
LCAS is an animal rescue organization.
Correct.
LCAS enforces the law.
LCAS chooses via contract that's renewable or cancelable to convey the housing of animals within its charge to Green Hill. LCAS has the legal ability to accept donations, and I assume that is not within the orbit of this law. But you were reading something. Is there some way we could get a synopsis of this, like a bill synopsis or whatever?
Yeah, that would be helpful. I'll email that to the group right now. It's both links from Oregon.gov. One is the overview of the rescue entity licensing program, who needs a license, and all of the specific dates. And then one is a It's the Senate Bill 883 that includes who the bill was sponsored by and all of the specific details of the bill that was passed back in 2019.
Good.
Good job.
I would like to know if there's any way to investigate how to get the rest of the rescues licensed.
Right.
And what the penalty is for not licensing. Those two questions.
Well, the other thing is, who assembled the hard information that there are, number one, 63 rescue organizations in Lane County?
All you got to do is go online.
Just
start
a second. And it's number, easy. Please, let me just, and number two, that there are only 23 that have been registered and duly certified. Where did we get that information? Was this done by the state?
That was given in a presentation about 2 weeks ago by the state's animal rescue coordinator. I'm also going to include her name and contact information in this email because I wonder if this group would enjoy either a brief presentation by her directly or reaching out to her with some of these questions that I can't answer.
Because if she, thank you, if she conveyed to you and told you exactly, hey, as far as we in the state know, there's 63 rescues that we identified, only 23 have gone through this process, which is 2 years old or whatever, one in a year and a half old, then presumably they've done that possibly for every county in the state.
Yes, so they have.
They're welcome to this. Okay.
There's 63 rescues in Lane County.
Yes.
That identify as a rescue, and when you say that, is this identifying them of having 10 or more animals in their care?
I think that's the qualifier, is that they have 10 or more animals at any given time in their care, and they solicit or accept donations in any form.
Right. And so I guess what I'm asking is that what was the criteria for this 63? Did they know that these were rescues that had more than 10 animals in their care? Someone was doing some legwork there, and I'm wondering who that was.
That's right. Very good point.
Sounds like we need to talk to Ashley. I think it'd be great if we could have a presentation from her. What's her name, Ashley?
Yes.
Thanks. Yeah.
You'll
be sending that information to us, right?
Yes, I'm emailing that right now.
Great. Thank you.
My understanding of the 63 is it was 63 local rescues that had expressed interest in the program when it was in the development stage. Oh. So they had gotten on the, like, basically listserv of their contact list of people for ODA to reach back out to as the program was developing. There was several glitches along the way in regards to the cost of the license and when the program was going to fully be functional. And so, although we only have 23, which sounds terrible, out of the 60 plus allegedly in Lane County, that was a high number of ARE certified rescues in the state.
How much does it cost, by the way?
Is it 375, Sasha?
Correct. That's for a 12-month period. It's a per-year license.
Well, I think all of us probably need to read the information you're going to send it, and it will answer a lot of the questions we have right now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hello. Okay, well, Sasha, excellent job again. Is there anything else you'd like to add to your comments?
Nope, not at this time.
You're doing a great job. Go ahead.
Yeah, Sasha, I just had a question for you that came up when we're talking to Misha. So Green Hill, is it my understanding that Green Hill right now is only providing services for spay and neuter for community feral cats, not individual?
So yes, we are prioritizing large colonies and scenarios in which caregivers are caring for large colonies, or we're working directly with animal welfare officers who are helping individuals deplete their numbers and manage some active hoarding situations. Right. And so in those cases, some of those animals are being spayed or neutered and returned. Others are being brought in for intake.
And she's ordering pork. Did we want to order half a pig?
Well,
I'm going to
half.
Yeah.
Pigs aren't
haunted.
I'm sorry.
I love you.
I'm not understanding. What's going being said here?
Well, I think there was a conversation going on, and but so Sasha, so then the next question I have is, do you think that this will be the priority for Green Hill moving forward, like into the new year, to stay with really prioritizing trying to control the colonies rather than going back to individual? Because I think that then informs our decision about WAG and funds released to them.
Yeah, I think it's great timing for that question. We're actually having a discussion about this as a team tomorrow afternoon. But I could say for at least the very near future, there are enough large hoarding situations and large colonies that need our attention, that is how we think the best way to manage our resources and to see a significant return on that work is to reduce some of those large colony numbers or their ability to continue to multiply.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Is there still a successor to that Bob Barker, Cheryl Spay Neuter mobile hospital program that used to come down here every other month? It seemed like that was really beautiful.
That was quite a while ago.
Yeah, I know, but is there anything like that that still happens that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think so.
No, there isn't.
That was wonderful. And there'd be a lot of people came in there. Okay, Sasha, thank you very much. And thanks for always coming. We really appreciate it. Number six, LCAS Animal Services activity, and any other recap of the OACCC conference. Elise, would you care to say something?
Sure. We had a great time at the Oregon Animal Control Conference. Big shout out to Brian Austin with the City of Springfield. He was the elected training coordinator this year for the group, and he did an amazing job getting presenters together and scheduling our day and our food and entertainment and all of the parts that went together to make the event successful. Other things LCAS has been involved in recently, there was an event called Dog Fest held in the city of Eugene couple weeks, maybe almost a month ago prior. We participated in that. We had a booth and we promoted dog licensing and the spay neuter voucher. And fielded any questions pertaining to animal ordinances in Lane County. We also have a new officer on our team. Senior Officer Michelle Peters comes to us from Wyoming, and she is filling the shoes of Senior Officer Bernard Perkins, which is now retired.
Good.
And how many, don't we have 1.5 FTE positions for all of Lane County for animal control?
We currently have two filled full-time positions. I'm a full-time officer, and the new senior officer is also a full-time officer.
Wow, good. Great.
Good. Good. Step in the right direction.
Okay. And you gave us a license revenue printout and spay and neuter voucher line in that. So is there anything else that LCAS would like to bring to our attention, new developments, anything else?
We have a couple pending cases, but they're all awaiting litigation, so I can't make comment on that. At a meeting prior, the September meeting that we had to cancel or chose to cancel, I can't recall the reason for no meeting in September, I had been going to mention the fact that we successfully ran a livestock shelter again to support the evacuees impacted by the Middle Fork fires in the Oak Ridge community. And we implemented lessons learned from the Holiday Farm fire and had a successful sheltering operation.
That is excellent.
Great.
You know, keep in mind that former Commissioner Faye Stewart, who I think is still the executive director of the Faye and Lucille Stewart Foundation in Cottage Grove. Faye was county commissioner from Cottage Grove for two terms. He at one point expressed an interest in funding or partially funding such a facility. Keep that in mind anyway.
For horses.
Was it for horses? And by the way, has there been any update or repetition of the horse abuse situation?
In Cresswell?
Where they found dead horses and confiscated and issued a parole, probation, whatever. Is there been any development on that in any or any repetition? Hopefully not. In that situation?
In regards to the care of her animals, Davies is still in compliance with the orders outlined in her probation, and she's still serving out her neglect probation ordered by the courts. In regards to whether she's in compliance with restitution payment, I haven't received a recent update on that, but I imagine there's payments required.
But insofar as caring and feeding and protecting, the county does make visitation to ensure humane compliance is performed.
She's required to send us monthly documentation of her horse's condition. For her safety, I probably can't make too many more comments on that, but the horses. Okay. Are being well cared for at this point in time.
And,
there's been a drastic improvement.
But it is within the county's jurisdiction, since we have two full-time officers and unincorporated, to periodically, without advance notification, to verify that in point of fact, what is represented is actually true. You have the ability to do that?
Yes, we have the ability to do that, and we have done a home visit within the last 2 to 3 months.
Thank you very much. That was one of the most, I'll spare the adjectives. All right, is there any more open discussion?
I have something I could announce. There's a pet adoption event coming up, put on by Coldwell Banker, on the 16th of October. I believe that's a Saturday from 1 until 4 p.m. And there's various organizations that are going to be there, including Greenhill, to help promote adoptions. There's a vet, there's possibly a grooming facility, people, owner coming, and a boarding facility as well. And it's all about promoting adoptions. I don't know that dogs will actually be there. I've talked with Greenhill about it, and Greenhill said they would prefer anybody that wants to adopt a dog to actually come to Greenhill, but Greenhill will have a table and a presence there as well. There's going to be snacks. Pardon?
When and where?
October 16th, Coldwell Banker on 2741 Shadow View Drive in Eugene. That's 2741 Shadow View Drive in Eugene. And it's a Coldwell Banker that's putting it on in their parking lot. There'll be gift baskets. There will be vendors there and so forth. And they're hoping to have a pretty good size event and help with adoptions.
Well, I think we've had a pretty good. David, Misha, is Misha still there? Is Misha there?
No, she's not here.
Hi, sorry. I had it muted. Sorry.
Okay.
I'm here.
Misha is there. Would a November agenda item on awarding the second 10,000 still coincide agreeably with your expected needs?
You know, I was just wondering, would there be any way if it didn't disperse in time? And again, we're so grateful for this because it's helping so many people and really getting the citizens involved because they know about this fund. So they're active in their neighborhoods or communities right now, which is pretty great. And, you know, my thought would be, could WAG, if the funds came later, could WAG, we just don't want to see a break in the program. And so if we were able to front the funds and still continue with the program and document it very meticulously as we have done thus far, noting which ones were when the funds had run out with expectations of further funds, would that be amenable to the committee?
I don't know exactly what you're saying.
Well, if we were to wait until November and we did run out of funds before the funds dispersed, in an effort to not have a break in the program, could WAG simply continue to accept those people and front the money and use the money that we receive to reimburse WAG for those ones that we couldn't cover with the funds because they hadn't arrived yet? I'd just rather not close the program down and then reopen it again is the concern I have for the citizens.
Well, let me ask Elise and David. When we discussed this and initially recommended and authorized this, were we in agreement at that time for $20,000 in 10,000 increments?
The way I remember it is that we weren't sure we wanted to donate a full 20,000. The 10,000 that we did donate was to see how it was going to go. And if it was going to go well, then we would consider the extra 10, the way I remember it. And yep. It sounds to me like it's correct. Going well, and I would be amenable to going ahead with the extra 10. And Elise mentioned that she thought maybe she could expedite things or it could be expedited so that it doesn't take 5 months next time.
Are you making
that's
a motion?
That's the way I remember it too. Yeah. And also, I think that what we had last time was, if I'm remembering correctly, issues around COVID. And so we didn't have the meeting. We were trying to transition to online. There was some hold up there. So yeah, 5 months seemed needless.
Well, and to be clear, Katie, the 5 months was from the time that LCAS advisory committee and LCAS approved it.
Right.
So
right.
It wasn't a delay on your end at all. It was just the process that I understand.
Well, Elise, do you feel that, I think you made the comment that 3 to 4 months seem much more reasonable?
Yeah, I sure would hope 3 to 4 months would be a more realistic timeline, and I fully support it happening sooner right. than that. We can make it happen. LCAS is in full support of WEGS and the program that they run.
Scott?
Sorry.
Yes, Dave.
Do you think we should not make a motion this meeting because it's not on the agenda? Would it be appropriate to make a motion this meeting?
Yes, I think it would be.
All right, then I make a motion that we donate an extra $10,000 to WEG.
I'll second.
I'll third.
I guess I should reword that we recommend that the county commissioners right. allow, however it should be worded.
And that LCAS staff should, after county board authorization, disperse this upon information that, in point of fact, the initial 10,000 has been utilized. Is that comfortable?
Why should we do it?
I don't. That to me seems
I'm fine with that. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was just going to say, I'm fine with that. I just don't know who would hold the money, just in terms of timing.
Like, I don't know that that's necessary.
I'm afraid that if we do it that way, we'll have a gap in funds. And I see what you were talking about before, Misha. But I don't see how we would avoid a gap in the funding. I mean, that could go on for another month. And at that time, we are looking at kitten season.
Okay, let's just keep it clean. I guess my feeling is you've only spent $1,900 out of 10,000, and you want another 10,000. And I'm sure it's justified, and I'm sure your projections are valid. But we don't want you to be bankrolling 20 grand and not really spending it. But David, you have a motion. The motion's been made and seconded. Could you please repeat the motion?
That the LCAS Advisory Committee recommend to the county commissioners to release another $10,000 to WEG for this program.
For the purposes of spay and neuter.
Sure. However, it should be worded for the program.
And from the Harriet Smith.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Right. Right. The Harriet Smith.
This is for the needed feral cat spay and neuter unincorporated Lane County program, right?
Right.
Oh, it's a bunch of everything. No,
it's forever. Yeah. For however WEG implements it. WEG's a good organization. I think we all feel that. And let them use it how they feel it would be best be used.
I think that's fair enough. Is there any further discussion on David's motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. And opposed, nay. Then the motion is carried. Lay it upon the table. And items for next month's agenda, we'll review that disbursement, the status of that disbursement. And we will adjourn until November.
Is there a possibility we could have the person that came to the, whatever you call it, Elise, that you just went to talking about this Senate bill and the rescue licensing?
We can definitely reach out to her. She is due to have a baby soon, a human baby soon. So I'm not sure what her schedule looks like, but we can definitely shoot her an email, and she loves to share about the program.
Thank you.
We could Zoom from the maternity ward, though. So
I think that's up to her spot.
Okay, so November 8th is a Monday. I presume it's the second Monday in November. And please be safe and be careful and don't get COVID. And we look forward to meeting again. And I want to thank the staff. I thank Elise. Thank Megan. Thank Sasha. Thank all of you participating.
Thank you all.
We really appreciate it. And Misha, thanks you very much.
Thank you for your generosity for the Ferals. We really appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good meeting.
Bye-bye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, David.
Bet.
Bye.